This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
What are we talking about today?
Oh, lots of little things here.
Oh, little things. All right.
One of them to begin with is the deer are starting to move, so a lot of us got to be aware of that.
Yeah, I've been noticing a lot of that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the side of my car. I had a deer smack into the side.
Oh, no kidding.
Ran into me. I didn't hit the deer. The deer hit me.
Yeah.
I got a nice dent in my door.
Gee.
Uh-huh.
So that's something we got to be aware of. And the sooner you take precautions, the better, because they are starting to move into our yard, you know, check out what they're going to be eating through the winter. Or they may be checking out, you know, if we have an apple tree or crab apple or some fruit tree, they're coming in to feed on that. So some of the things you can do, there are repellents to use for deer, and they all work to a point. You have to change them up from time to time. You just can't find one, let's say liquid fence, for instance. It's one of the ones I've liked in the past. They will acclimate to it or get used to it, and eventually, you know, if they get hungry enough, they'll just ignore that scent. And liquid fence has what we call the rotten egg smell in it. You don't really smell it too much outdoors, but the deer have more sensitive smelling, so they can smell it, so they stay away from it.
That's weird, because it's just like how we were talking about weeks ago with other pests, or like ants, you
know, yeah,
specifically. Like they get used to,
yeah,
pesticide.
Yeah.
And then it becomes food for them.
Yeah. Yep, that's true.
Deer, the same thing.
Same thing, wow. Yeah. And it doesn't take long for them to acclimate to it.
Wow.
So it's a good idea to have two or three different types of deer deterrents, and to change them up from time to time, every few weeks or once a month, change it up so that you keep the deer really guessing that way. But the sooner you go to work by deterring them, the better off you're going to be, because once they find out what's to eat in your yard, and they've established a route that they like to travel, then they will continue that. So the sooner you can disrupt that route, and, you know, and a lot of tests show that if you disrupt it early, then they will just ignore your house for the rest of the winter. So the sooner you can do something, the better off you're going to be. But besides buying some of the repellents, there are home remedies, too. Now, I don't usually recommend home remedies because there really is no scientific research behind them. But I'm going to mention a few because I've tested them. Several of the people I know have tested them that I respect their knowledge on it. And some of them that are very good. And they are used in commercial.
So these are home remedies tested and approved,
yeah,
by Master, yeah, Gardener Bob Harris. Okay.
So garlic is one. Deer really detest garlic. And what you can do is put a few cloves in a gallon jug of water, let it steep, just like you're going to make sun tea, you make garlic tea. And then you can, spray it on your plants. And that will deter the deer. They really dislike that. Another one is mint. If you have some mint, make some mint tea, and the deer really dislike that. And you should do both, really, and change it up from time to time, because like I said, you know, they will eventually acclimate to it and just ignore that smell. So use garlic for a week, and then use mint for a week. If, you know, I'm saying a week, you spray it on, if new growth appears, that doesn't have the smell on it, so the deer will nip the new growth. If it rains or heavy dews, it'll wash it off, so then the smell is gone. So you reapply if it's rained or new growth has appeared. So garlic and mint. And another one, if you got some of those old cayenne peppers or jalapeno peppers that you're not going to really use indoors. Make some tea out of that too. Crush them up, throw them in the water, let it steep for a week or two, and then you can spray that.
Wow.
Be careful. Don't do it on a windy day because it can blow back in your face. you're not going to be hurt by it, but you will be miserable.
I was going to say, don't do it like traditional tea either, like in and have it in boiled water.
No, don't do that. No, just
that steam. That's pepper spray.
Yeah. So just crush up some peppers or chunk them up, throw them in a gallon jug of water, set them outside in the sun so the sun can do the work and it'll make tea. So you have garlic, mint, and hot pepper. You have three to work with. It's been shown a lot of success with that. Of course, the number one way is fencing. And there's a lot of different ways to fence, too. Just a regular tall fence. And they always recommend, you know, it's got to be taller than 6 foot because deer can jump over that. But I have seen in cases where even a 3 foot tall fence will work if there's no landing pad on the other side of the fence so the deer can't jump and feel secure. I've done a lot of 3 foot high fences before where there's no where for the deer to jump except for right in the middle of the shrub.
Oh, yeah.
And they're just not going to do that.
How tall can a deer jump, do you think?
Oh, easily 6, 7, 8 foot even.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, easily. So be aware of that. You know, fencing is guaranteed to keep the deer away. Now, there are certain shrubs that they do prefer, you know, and that's going to be mostly the evergreen shrubs. They really do like them a lot. So those may have to be fenced, or if you're not going to do the spraying. And then a lot of the other shrubs, they will nibble on. And then again, you know, if they get hungry enough, we have a harsh winter and the population is high, which it is right now. And I'd like to talk about that.
Okay.
Then they will, everything will be food for them. So just be aware of that. Young trees. The bucks may want to start rubbing the velvet off of their horns. And so they like to use young trees. It's usually about a 2-inch diameter trunk they like to rub on. So those, maybe we want to think about protecting. We can do the fence around it, or we can wrap the trunk, which I recommend wrapping the trunk, especially young trees, because it's going to protect them through the whole winter for weather, not only deer, but for weather and for rabbits chewing. So think about that with your young trees that you've planted. Any young shrubs, you may want to put the fence around. Now, it doesn't have to be a wire fence. It can be that deer fencing or bird netting that has become real popular, and that you just kind of drape around the shrub, and you can connect it with a couple twist ties, and it's really invisible. It doesn't really show up. So that deer fencing is a real great product to use.
And like, is it like the snow fence kind of stuff, right? The plastic stuff?
Yeah, plastic. Yeah. It's usually black plastic. Mm-hmm. You can get several years out of it by being careful when you put it on and remove it to roll it up nice and neat. Otherwise, it can be a little difficult to handle. But it's pretty much invisible, but it's enough to stop the deer and the rabbits from eating on your plant material.
I'm surprised you said bird netting because, I mean, that's like nothing to it, but I guess you're right. I mean, if they can't, like, they're going to get a mouthful of net.
Yeah.
If they try to chew the leaves.
Or they have sensitive noses. So as soon as they touch that plastic, it's a real weird feeling to them. So they back away.
Oh, okay.
Now, one other way, and this is what I do in my yard. I used to do all the fencing and sprays until I went to a seminar a long time ago that was a nut grower. And I think I've told this story before, so I'll make it short. Mm. And he was always harping at the dinner table about how the squirrels are getting all his nuts. And his wife says, well, why don't you just feed the squirrels and they'll leave your trees alone? And he laughed at it and told all his fellow employees, and they all had a big laugh about it. And so she was telling him, he says, look at you. You come home here to this dinner table every night. You could collect some vegetables out in the garden or somewhere else and eat, but you come here because the plate is ready. So he decided, what the heck, let's give it a try. So he put out some squirrel feeders, and lo and behold, the squirrels preferred the food that he put out rather than the trees. So I tried that at home. Instead of fencing off my shrubs and plants every year, mm-hmm. I started feeding the deer. Now, I know that some people harp on that. You're not supposed to feed the deer, and right. you're not supposed to feed the birds and yada, yada. But I do. They come to my cracked corn pile and eat what's there, and then they leave. So they very, very seldom do they eat off my shrubs. I get a little bit of damage, but that little bit always seems to grow right back every year. So that's what I like to do. I just feed the deer. And that way, too, every night when my wife and I sit down for supper, we can sit right there. And
you got a little bit of a show.
Yep, we get a little bit of a show. They seem to know the timing, too, of when that guy's going to put out the food. So, so I put it out just before supper. We sit down, and we sit down at a table for supper yet. And
but tell me, you have a TV there for you?
No,
in the
no,
dining room.
No.
Come on.
No, no, sometimes we sit in the dining room. Okay, but quite often we do sit at the table and watch the show out there. They can be a lot of fun to watch. And while I'm talking about deer, I noticed two in my yard yesterday. One fully spotted. These are young ones, and the other one just a few spots left on it. So still young out there, and the young like to taste test everything, just like a young child.
Mm-hmm.
So just be aware of that. You know, even though they've said that this is deer resistant, the young don't know that yet. So they
can't read the label yet.
Yeah.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back and talk more with Master Gardener Bob Harris. It's The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM.
If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford. Still working on your summertime projects? They have a big selection of patio slabs, and prices are coming down on treated lumber. So now's the time to buy at Worth W. Smith. Still great prices on room air conditioners, too. Just arrived a new shipment of men's Carhartt clothing. And for the canning season, you'll find all sizes of canning jars and other canning supplies. Remember, if you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
And just like that, we're back with more of The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM and on demand at WESB.com as well. You can hear a bunch of previous seasons on there available for your listening pleasure. And what do you have next to talk about?
First of all, you know, I was off last week because my wife and I went out to Michigan and did some exploring. My wife really enjoys lighthouses, so we got to visit all up and down the Lake Michigan, six different lighthouses. Wow. It was pretty amazing. And then, of course, we got to visit gardens, you know, for me.
Sure.
And there's some really special gardens out there. There's a place called Holland, Michigan, which was settled by the Dutch. And it's just like the Holland over in the Netherlands. They've created a whole island, 36-acre island, and they put a windmill in the center of it, one that was shipped right from the Netherlands, a windmill that was built in the 1700s, still in working condition. They still use it every day.
Wow, neat.
I learned a little lesson. You know, the plantings were spectacular. There was a huge tulip fields. Of course, there wasn't any tulips there now. But, you know, in the Netherlands, they deal with more than just tulips. There are a huge producer of all kinds of flowering plants. And they had a lot of the flowering plants there representing what you would see in Holland, along with all the buildings and shops. Quite a place. It's getting off gardening, but I'm just still so amazed about the windmill itself.
Yeah.
It's quite a piece of machinery. It was invented over 1,000 years ago, and a windmill can not only pump the water out to dry the fields, it also can grind the wheat to make flour. It can make paper. It can print the paper. It can make cloth. It can saw lumber for building. And it goes on and on. It's just an ideal machine, and it's totally green.
Right, right.
So it's just an amazing machine to see, and how they invented this over 1,000 years ago. But I picked up some fact sheets after visiting some of the gardens out there from the Michigan State University Extension Office, just like we have in Pennsylvania, Penn State University. And so I wanted to mention some of the interesting facts I've seen. And it's going to relate to us, too, because they have about the same weather we do. So one on grass, they have found through a lot of tests, and this has been scientifically proven, to mow high for weed and grub control. A lot of us like to mow our lawn real short and to make it look more like a golf course. But a lot of science has proven that if we let it grow high and mow it high, and I'm talking about 3 inches to 4 inches high, that not only will it look nice and greener, especially through the hot, dry time we had this year where everybody's grass turned brown, just about everybody's.
Not yours, of course.
Oh, no, mine was too.
Oh.
Yeah. It also... the taller the grass, the deeper the root system will be and bigger root system. So it can withstand drought a little better, so it will stay partially green. Or by that tall grass developing those bigger roots, they can withstand those attacks from the grubs that feed on the grass roots. Now, the grubs mostly I'm talking about here are from the Japanese beetle that comes out around July 4th and then goes... as a beetle, and then goes back to the soil and turns back into a grub around August and starts feeding on grass roots.
Wait, I didn't know they turned back into a grub?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So they don't really turn back. They lay eggs, and those eggs hatch into grubs.
Oh, geez.
And they love to feed on grass roots.
Okay, I thought you meant like an adult can shed its wings and then turn back. I'm like, wait a minute here.
No, doesn't do it that way. Okay. Exactly. Yeah.
I get what you're
But by having a taller grass, you can deter a lot of that brown grass by the grub feeding, because we're not going to stop at all. And there's other insects that feed on the grass roots. So having that taller grass, bigger root system that can withstand the attacks that they will. Do much, much better.
And you said that's good for weed control as well?
Also for weed control. The taller the grass, the less sun is hitting the soil, so the fewer weed seeds can germinate because they don't like to be in the shade of all that tall grass. When I say tall grass, I'm talking about 3 inches or 3.5 inches. I'm not talking about foot-high grass.
Yeah, wild.
Yeah. That poses a whole nother problem. So having your grass a little bit taller is a good idea, except for just before winter, we'll want to do one cut where your grass will be lower to protect it through the winter because snow mold can bother it. It won't kill your grass, but it will make it look ugly in the spring. So keep it tall as long as you can, and then come fall, you can lower that mower back down and do one short cutting. So that's a bit of the information on the tall grass. Taller grass is much more healthier for your lawn than cutting it short. And also, I guess, with a taller grass and mulching mower, we don't need to add the fertilizers and the pesticides and all those things that we normally have to do when we're cutting it short, because we're making the lawn suffer by cutting it short. So that's enough of the grass.
That's enough of the grass. Yeah. That was from, again, the Information Center from the place that you visited in Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan University Extension.
Okay.
Yep, very knowledgeable. I've read a lot of articles from them before, Ohio and Michigan and Pennsylvania. We're all pretty similar. So it's good information.
Now, I just do want to mention that just because we're talking about this, doesn't mean we won't take your phone calls. So if you do have any gardening questions, the phone lines are open. We are live today. That's 814-368-9372.
Also, We got to go into Muskegon, Michigan, and a very, very beautiful town or city, really. And right in the middle of the city, a large group of gardeners created a Monet garden. And we got to visit that, and it was quite spectacular. It was probably only a half an acre, but it was created just like the Monet garden that you would see overseas in Europe there. So it was quite beautiful and kind of inspirational to me that the town just got together and decided to create it and care for it.
What makes it a Monet-style garden?
What
does that mean?
Through his famous painting there. And I always pronounce the city wrong, Givenry. Okay. And it's one of his most famous paintings, his gardens. Has a nice water feature with a bridge going over it.
Mm.
And lots and lots of perennials that he liked to paint, especially as he was getting later in life. When he was losing his eyesight, he could still paint all the colors that showed up in his gardens. So it was a beautiful sight and very inspirational for me. I'd really highly recommend it. And maybe someday we could do something like that here in town. It draws a lot of people. I saw a lot of people coming, stopping, parking along the road just to go in and visit that garden.
Wow.
Yep. Another thing, too, with our vegetable gardens, how important pollinators are. Now, some garden plants, like the tomato and the pepper, are self-pollinating, but they do benefit from bumblebees. When a bumblebee lands on a flower, if you really watch real close, the first thing he does after he lands, he flaps his wings really quickly. And that causes a vibration that starts to disperse the pollen. It stirs it up. And, of course, that helps pollinate the plant. I'm saying they're self-pollinating. Each flower has male and female parts. So it doesn't really need a pollinator. But again, it benefits greatly from the bumblebee. That's the only one really that's well known for what we call buzz pollinating. But a lot of the other vegetables, they do require a bee or a fly of some sort. And we have a lot of different native bees around here. Most of them are very, very small. They're even small. Some of them are even smaller than the size of a fly. So just be aware of that. If you see those little bugs flying around, it may be a good time not to do any spraying of insecticide because they probably are pollinators. And they'll take the pollen from the male flower and deliver it to the female flower. We'll rub off, and then we will get fruit from that plant.
You're saying that even those little, like we call, my parents called them sweat bees.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are pollinators too?
Those are pollinators also.
Oh, yep. Okay. Yep. I thought it was only like the big fuzzy bumblebees.
No, I think really there are more pollinators in Bradford, Pennsylvania that are very small and fly looking than there are honeybees and bumblebees.
Wow, neat.
Just be aware of that. Just because you see some small bug flying around, try to identify it properly before you do anything to disrupt that pollination. Because I know a lot of people, myself included, had a little rough time getting good pollination in the garden, so didn't get a lot of squash and cucumbers and some of those other fruits that really need that pollinator to produce, and blueberries, and the list goes on and on, that really need the pollinators to get a good production out of. But it's getting close to that time where we should start cleaning out some of those garden plants. You know, maybe our tomato plant's still doing well, and they probably will right up to a frost. But squash and cucumbers, maybe even the peppers, they're probably done for the year. So it's a good idea to get them out of the garden, because there are certain pests that can overwinter because the plant's still there. So it's a good idea. We call it good housekeeping.
Now, speaking of cucumbers, that's funny you mentioned that, because we just got a message on our Facebook page.
Oh.
Kara says, I have a question. I harvested my cucumbers and they're turning more of a orange color. Are they still good?
They're still good, but they're what we call, they're getting ripe now. when they're one of those vegetables, the pepper and the cucumber, that we harvest and eat when it isn't ripe yet.
Oh, it's still green. Right?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, but as they ripen, they will turn color. Pepper may turn yellow or may turn red. The cucumber will turn yellow as it ripens.
Okay.
To a point. You know, once they get mushy, then they're right. They're still safe to eat, but they're not very tasty.
So if they're turning orange in her case, they're still tasty to eat?
Oh, yeah. Still tasty to eat. If they're just barely turning.
Right. Now, yeah. Does it taste the same?
Yeah, it will taste the same. It'll be a little softer texture.
Okay.
You may not get the crunch, but they're still tasty and still nutritious for us.
Wonderful. Thanks for the comment there, Kara.
Yeah.
And thanks for checking us out on Facebook Live. I think we're almost out of time. We have about a minute left. Do you want to get something real quick?
Yeah, again, I just got to harp on the pollination. Oh, another thing, too, is really once in a while, every 3 to 5 years, it is a good idea to get your soil tested. If your garden vegetable, flower, tree, shrub is not performing like you expected, maybe it's a good time to test the soil. There may be something there missing because fertilizer, just a fertilizer you buy off the shelf, may not be supplying it. Your plants really need 18 different nutrients. And in most fertilizers, there's not quite the whole 18 in there. So sometimes it's a good idea.
18 you can, different ones.
Yeah, 18 different
sounds
ones.
Sounds like a huge science project. We have to have like Dr. Frankenstein's laboratory to get like, you know, some plant growth now.
And that soil test through the Penn State Cooperative Extension can help you out with that. You can do the sample, send it in. They'll send you back a report of just what you should do to improve the soil to get the plant health back.
Yeah, that's really cool. All right. And with that, we are all out of time.
Okay.
Well, we'll be back again next week, correct?
Yes.
I always get mixed up.
Yeah.
When's our last show? Through the end of September?
October.
Or October. Yeah. Okay, good. Because I like doing this.
Okay, great. Me too.
I always learn something every week with you. So it's always like, all right. So next week we'll have another live show. And of course, until then, you can catch us on demand at WESB.com. And this has been The Gardening Show, sponsored by Worth W. Smith. And 75 years of serving Bradford, WESB, B107.5 FM.